This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello, hello. Good evening. Hello, everyone. Hope you're doing well. Welcome to Friday Night Live. I'm Omar. I'm hosting today, and I've got Mr. Joe Zampa with me. Hello, mate.
Hiya. How you doing? You all right?
I'm not too bad. Evening to the chat. Get everyone to say hello in there. Hope we're all good. I'm doing all right, mate. I'm anxious ahead of tomorrow, but we'll talk about that in more detail, no doubt, in a bit. But yeah, how's things been, mate? What do you think, obviously, after Monday, mate? What are you thinking?
Yeah, well, I guess it's two ways of looking at it, isn't it? I mean, lots of people, I can understand lots of people being a little bit disgruntled with the result and everything else, but I guess if you put it in perspective, we've had some decent results against Watford, Southampton. We shouldn't have won. Mm-hmm. Had we lost those games and then beat Rotherham, let's say, would everyone be arguing now? You know, probably not, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think a lot boils down to what happens tomorrow, of course. Obviously, we can't afford to lose that. If we lose that, then we're bang in trouble, aren't we, I guess? If we can at least draw, preferably win, mm-hmm. then that just pulls us out a little bit from that danger zone. But as it stands, we're still 4 points clear from the bottom three. So I'll be in that position then in Huddersfield or Sheffield Wednesday's at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Very true. So it's Friday Night Live, guys. It's Friday evening. Who's got a drink? I've got a Peroni to hand, so get that down there.
The old Corona, not the COVID type.
Do you remember that? Yeah. Back in the day, Joe, we used to reminisce and go, what's everyone got today to drink and stuff like that? Do you remember?
Yeah. We first started to do it, didn't we?
Yeah, exactly.
Was it the Camden Pale Ales? Yeah. Mick used to rib me about the posh Surrey drink he used to come with, didn't he?
To be fair, Camden Hells, might have to get a couple tomorrow because it's what led us. On the day I changed it up at Sheffield Wednesday, I was like, I'm going to go to Camden Hells today. And we won 4-0. So maybe I need to get Camden Hells tomorrow. So maybe it's the good luck charm. But hello, evening to Carl. Hope you're well, mate. Hello, Peter. Bobby's coming straight away. How we're getting fucked tomorrow. I mean, we'll talk about Huddersfield away shortly. As a comment is put by us in there, don't forget to like, subscribe. If you're watching for the first time, obviously subscribe. We do Friday Night Lives pretty much every Friday. Usually you've got a bald fella called Mickey who's normally around, but we've sent him on a scouting mission either way on international duty, I suppose you could say.
In Turkey, having a hair transplant on me.
You said it, not me. No Mickey tonight, hence you've got me leading the way. So do bear with me, but I'm sure we'll be all good. It's like a, what's it called? When you never forget how to ride a bike, do you, right? So, you know, it takes a little while to ease your way in, but we're all here anyway, having a bit of a laugh anyway. Hello, Chris.
And like Mickey, Omar is open to abuse as well. So don't feel like because Mickey's not here, you can't abuse Omar. So, or me for that matter.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we like a bit of banter, don't we, I suppose, as it goes. But yeah, evening to Lions Roar, evening to Mark, evening Andrew, evening to Mark. Bobby, where's Mickey and Stephen? Stephen, I don't actually know where he is today. I don't think he fancied it. I mean, yeah, I'm not sure his actual protocol where he is. I'm not sure, but it's all right. You got me and Joe, so it's all right.
Yeah.
We do have to get a result, indeed, at Huddersfield. The Watch Wally, hello, evening to you, and good evening to Alex S. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, we mentioned Huddersfield. I mentioned Robin briefly there. I mean, yeah, I think me and Ben covered it during the week on the show.
Good show, by the way.
Thank you. Appreciate it. I mean, I think I'm glass half full just, but initially walking out of that ground on Monday, I mean, it's been a while since I've been that fuming. I mean, ironically, I remember going Huddersfield away a few years ago and walking out being similarly like kind of fuming at the time, because it's not normally a good hunting ground for us, Huddersfield, I've got to say. But, yeah, I mean, the initial force after the game Monday on that drive home down the M1 wasn't pretty. It was just all expletives came out. And I think as a kind of the week's gone on, I've mellowed to it a bit. And obviously we spoke about it on the show, but that second half on another day, mate, I do rethink this, Joe. You know, we could have won out that game probably quite comfortably, albeit all from set pieces. But the opportunities were there for us, I felt, on Monday. And it was, I suppose, we rode our luck a little bit and ultimately paid the price in the end.
Yeah, I think the common denominator here is I think that anyone actually went to go watch that game live and have travelled seemed to be the most disgruntled leaving that game. And I completely get that. You pay your hard-earned money. It's not like a half-hour journey either for most of us. So, you know, going there and then not getting a result for a game that, let's be honest, if you're going to bet on any game to win the season, yeah, it'd be that one against Rotherham, who haven't won in how many games. But I think, again, when you strip it back, you've had time to kind of digest it and let the dust settle a little bit. As you say, Omar, you look at the stats, you look at how many shots we had. You know, we had more shots on target, much more corners. We actually had more possession. I know we didn't create many clean-cut chances, but let's be honest, when has Millwall ever created clean-cut chances, especially against a team that are going to get behind the ball and make it difficult for us and not give us any space to exploit at the back? So I think, you know, in another day, and I think even Dan mentioned it in our WhatsApp group, didn't he, Omar? I think any other day, I think 999 times out of 1,000, we're going to win that game. And I think they were very, very lucky. I think they've only managed like two or three shots and, you know, on target, with their half chances. And yeah, they're quite lucky with the goal scores. Had we got an early goal and got a notice in front, perhaps it'd be a different story. We could have really exploited them. They've got to come out and attack us, of course. So, yeah, I feel the frustration. I could see why one's unhappy, but yeah, let's not have a go at Harris. Let's remember what he's done for us in his second spell as manager, and he's really got us out of that shithole, hasn't he? You know, so one game shouldn't define the good work he's done since his comeback. And tomorrow's another day, another game, and we'll see where we go.
My mic apparently is crackly, so do work with me if it's a bit off.
Of course, my headphones. I'm glad it's your mic then.
Is it better now? Is it still bad, or is it better? Or
I think when you talk, it's a little bit crackly.
Okay. Well, I'm going to work with it. I'll try and
it's maybe not too bad.
Cool. Well, do bear me, guys, and if necessary, I'll change over to something different. But technical issues are always a must on a Friday Night Live. But yeah, keep me posted on that one. But yeah, I agree with you. I think obviously looking back at the game, like I said, initially I was a bit upset. I think you're right. I'm very pro Harris at the moment, and that would be the buzzword, because you've mentioned Neil Harris within 6 minutes. And it's a split opinion amongst the fan base at the moment, isn't it? And I mean, everyone in the comments, what are you thinking about Neil Harris at the moment? I suppose everyone's got the right of speech on that one. I think I'm very much the same as you and always have been pro Neil Harris. You know, he gets the club, he understands what we're about. And okay, we wanted a progressive, forward-thinking coach or manager in Joe Edwards. It didn't work out. But I think, especially where we're in a dogfight at the moment, Joe, I mean, you've obviously you're pro Harris at the moment, but would you keep him for next season as well if he kept us up?
I like how you say you're pro Harris at the moment.
You had
a little dig on your WhatsApp group earlier, didn't you? you and Ben,
Well, but also, I think you're right saying he's done the job so far, but it's not done till it's done. Obviously,
no.
I'm very pro Neil Harris, and, you know, I love the man. He is a modern day Mill legend. I'm a younger fan, and in my lifetime, you know, he's amongst, for me, the likes of Dave Ford, Jimmy Abdus, Paul Robinson, you know, and Neil is that kind of talisman figure there for me as a fan. And also, he doesn't get a lot of respect for what he did in his first spell as manager, in my opinion. You know, he stabilised the ship after the relegation, two playoff final appearances. Then we ended up, I think, what, eighth in our first season in the Championship. And then we had one poor season, but we did stay up still. And in the grand scheme of things, for a club like us, I've been talking about it in our chat, haven't I? But, you know, to be consistently up there in the top half of the table, we've done it. It's a tough challenge, though, considering the resources we've got as a club.
And also, like the point you made there, like in his first season, he did it in very, very limited resources, very limited budget. You know, it was a lot of sort of finding, yeah, little kind of gems here and there on a cheap, and a couple of loan players that kind of sustained us, kept us going. So some young players coming through. likes of Aidan O'Brien and a few others, I can imagine. But yeah, you know, I don't think there's anyone out there calling for his head at the moment. You know, far from it. I think everyone can see what he's done and the good work he's done and how he's kind of helped to get us out of this this problem. I think you mentioned it on our group chat earlier today. Perhaps a win and a draw is enough to see us into safety. And I agree. I thought 50 was the magic number, but I do think Sheffield Wednesday and possibly Huddersfield, but you can look at Plymouth as well. They can struggle a little bit. So they're still very open down there at the moment. But I think one win and a draw just kind of like keeps us safe. If we win tomorrow, suddenly we're 7 points ahead of Huddersfield.
Yeah.
With what, five games left?
Yeah. I mean, he's 100% right, definitely.
Yeah, and that kind of pulls them in there. And don't forget, Sheffield Wednesday's got to win their games. Plymouth are in turmoil at the moment. They're struggling and, you know, not doing too brilliantly, are they? Birmingham, okay, they got a win, a 1-0 win, didn't they, with Rowett in charge. Mm-hmm. Can you see them pulling out of it, possibly, you know, with Rowett, you know what he's like, with his clean sheets and stuff. So, yeah, a lot to play for. And let's be honest, you know, would we want it any other way? Yes, we want to be fighting for a playoff and automatic promotion, but do we really want to be sitting in mid-table at the moment with nothing to play for with four or five games left? It makes it interesting, makes it exciting, doesn't it, I guess?
It does make it interesting. I mean, I felt like walking out of the ground on Monday. That second half, I was kicking every fucking ball. I was like, walked out, like, sweating a bit, and probably the people around me thinking, what's this geezer on? Like, but it wasn't
to be
like
fair,
that.
You're about 12 sledders in by then. That
well, I drove on Monday, so even well, then, I'm still giving it some, because it matters. You're right. It does make it interesting, but like, it does matter. And I think obviously the comment here from the watch wall, I've got the telly on as well now. I'm a big Rotherham fan tonight, mate, because Rotherham are playing Plymouth and you know how it works. They turned us over. Johansson looks like he's having a blinder already, their goalkeeper, or as Gordon Banks. But yeah, I mean, if they went down, I'm not sure, you know, I'm sure we won't be short of sewers in the Championship next season. But yeah, it's a big game. Obviously, I'll keep you posted on the score on that one because I've got it in the background. But we're all Rotherham fans tonight, that's for sure. But yeah, evening to Richard. I'll do some more comments. Mark Murphy, Mickey's having a transplant. Won't he look daft with a kidney on his head?
Probably my kidney, yeah.
Yeah. That's true. The run is about the current four when we haven't won in four. Well, you're right, John. Obviously, we haven't won in four, but it's 11 points from 21. And I think the previous 21 under Edwards, was it 1 point in 21? I think the stat was going around.
Yeah, you're right.
And I think I was criticised for it, saying it prior to the weekend just gone. I said I would have took 2 points at the weekend if you gave it to me. Obviously, our four and homes, we should beat Rotherham. But John's right somewhat there. Obviously, it's about the current form and keep them getting points on the board and keep applying pressure. You want the opposition and the other teams to walk out their grounds come 5 o'clock going, shit, Mill picked up another point. Mill picked up another 3 points. You know, you want that kind of, because that's what we were all doing when we walked out on Monday thinking, shit, we're suddenly 4 points Rotherham was off us and we're playing them at the weekend. So, yeah, obviously, it's a tricky one, but I think at the moment, you know, it doesn't change for me. Like you said there, like it is a win and a draw. How they come doesn't really matter.
Which way around.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if we beat Leicester next week. That's still a win. Do you know what I mean? Like it doesn't matter how it's done. And we never do it the easy way at Millwall, do we, Joe? So, yeah,
no.
That's how it is, isn't it?
Well, I say it wouldn't be Millwall, would it, if we were in this situation. But, yeah, I just think it makes it exciting. I think we've got enough in us to stay up. I really do. And let's be honest, you know, I'll be in our position than be in Sheffield Wednesday position or Huddersfield position at the moment where you have to get these points, get you out of the crap. Yeah, interesting to see what happens tomorrow. I've got a funny feeling that tomorrow will be a different game to Rotherham. Yeah. Huddersfield being at home, they desperately need the points. A win is what they need against us. They know by beating us, it brings them 1 point behind us, potentially brings them out of the relegation free. So they're going to come at us and they're going to hopefully leave some gaps in space behind them. We saw it happen with West Brom the other day. They came at us very open, very attacking, very high line. And we exploited that, you know, on two or three occasions. We scored with Watmore on one occasion. Obafemi was very lucky. He should have buried his chance, the chance he had. But we will get some more clear-cut chances, I think, against Huddersfield. Different game to the Rotherham game. So be interested what happens. Of course, if we concede early, it makes it a bit shit because, you know, if Huddersfield go 1-0 ahead, you could bet your life they're going to defend. And as you can see from our stats, we don't really have the players to break them down, do we? In creating those open, clear-cut chances. And we haven't got the aerial threat in the air either, like a Matt Smith or something like that, or a Morrison who you could pump balls into. They're going to win headers and stuff, you know. So, yeah, interesting game. And I know I ain't going to be there, unfortunately, but I'll be watching it on a stream. And, yeah, be exciting. Exciting to watch.
Absolutely. I mean, I'll read some more comments here. There's quite a few coming in. Keep them coming, guys, and I'll be sure to get through all of them. Andrew Roberts says here, I said before the West Brom game that we'd get 3 points from that game, Rotherham away and Huddersfield away. If we draw tomorrow, we'll only get 2 points from a possible nine. Not good. It's great. You're right. At the moment, it's a bit up and down, isn't it? But look, it's we've still got 5-6 games to go to put up, right? Bobby Mills says here, Flem and No Neck are over Femi up front tomorrow. Chris Brown says, yes, Joe, I was well pissed off. I think that's probably after the game on Monday. Yeah. Excuses for not scoring don't keep you up. I think I said this on the show on Wednesday, Joe, or Thursday, whenever it went out. But I think we scored 38 goals all season. So it's always been a problem for us anyway, historically in this division. We never seem to score plenty of goals. But I think we're the third joint least goal scoring division, along with Stoke. And I think beneath that is Rotherham, who put two past us. And then I think there was another club escaping me. But we're down there, ain't we? We're not scoring enough goals at the minute. That's probably the underlying problem.
But also to John's point there, Brian Clough once said, if you don't concede, you don't lose. I'm not saying we're quite there at the moment with loads of clean sheets, but we've had quite a few clean sheets since Harris has been in charge. It's definitely shored our defence up a little bit. And we've all said it, you know, if we don't win tomorrow, we get a draw. That's not a bad result in my eyes. That still keeps us 4 points above Huddersfield, who still sit third or bottom with only a few games left, you know, and we've still got Plymouth to come as well. I fancy us to do a job on Sunderland. I know we're away from home, but I think they're very, very vulnerable. We've got nothing to play for Sunderland at the moment, so that's a winnable game. And of course, you've got Cardiff as well, who again haven't really got that much chance to get into the playoffs. There are better teams up there at the moment who are doing better than they are, and I think they will possibly play a bit more of an open game. I'm not saying they're not going to go for it, because of course Cardiff would love to beat us. It's always that Wales versus England rivalry, especially when it comes to a team like Millwall and Cardiff or Swansea. You always get that extra bit of bite to the game, and the fans want to beat us, of course they do. But the point I'm making is they're going to try and come at us, and I think we need teams to attack us a little bit to allow us to counter-attack them and get our chance and score, you know, off on the break and whatnot. We've never been good, have we, Omar, play against teams that sit back and let us attack them. Yeah, I can't remember the last time we did that. We probably did against Rotherham, to be fair. Was it last season? We won 3-0?
This year as well. We done it both times.
Yeah.
3-0 in a row at home.
That's right. But not very often do we come against a team that just sort of sit back and then we end up breaking them down and beating them. So, yeah, I'm optimistic about tomorrow, but we'll see.
Here's an interesting take, and let's put it into the chat as well. I blame the players, not the head coach. I'm sure he's referring to Monday. Thanks for your comment, Metin. But I kind of subscribe to this theory a little bit, Joe, after Monday, because obviously the team lineup was quite evident that, you know, Denore's in for Billy Mitchell, kind of suggesting get a ball playing midfielder in there, someone to, you know, get on the ball a bit more. And that first half, we played Rotherham at their own game, I felt like. We did have a lot of the ball, considering they're a struggling side, short of confidence. We kind of resulted to their game. Ben put an argument to me saying maybe it's Harris' ploy to, you know, first 45, keep it closed and sharp, and then second half go for it, which might be a suggestion. But I felt like Harris played Denore deliberately, and the first half, he said it himself, I think, after the game, his interview, it was, you know, it was abysmal, really, the first half. Because you're making a side like Rotherham, who won 3 games all season, look quite semi-decent and on our level, when ultimately they shouldn't be. Obviously, they got the result in the end. But second half was a bit better. They sat a bit deeper, didn't they? But, I mean, interesting comment that. I mean, what do you reckon after Monday? I mean, obviously, Harris set the team up similar style, but different type of personnel in there to try and change up, I suppose.
Yeah, I think the thought process from Harris, as you say, was to bring someone like Casper Denore, who's a better midfielder. Let's be honest, he's probably our best technical midfielder in the club. But the trouble is, the game didn't pan out the way Harris wanted it to. He thought we were going to get the ball down, you know, create chances. But if you watch the game, especially the first half, like you say, Omar, the ball was up in the air 67% of the time. The ball was very rarely on the deck. So you could have, yeah, Zinedine Zidane in the middle of the park there, can't he? But the ball's up in the air, it's going over his head 5, 6, 7 times. There's not really a lot you can do. You're just sort of chasing shadows a little bit.
But to challenge that, Joe, a little bit then. So you play us on Saturdays or Sundays, and you have done, like, obviously not the level we're at now. And but when you're playing the game, it's the player's responsibility. The manager can only do so much from the touchline. So whilst that's going on, I was saying it to Ben on Monday, like, why is no one saying to the players, get the ball on the floor, keep hold of the ball and soak that up a bit, and just kind of then start to put your authority on the game? That's almost when that's the argument I subscribe to about blaming the players instead of the manager for Monday.
Yeah. No, I agree totally. I think that the difficult thing is sometimes when you're playing against a team that is adopting a certain style of football, like Rotherham, for example, you can't help but fall into that trap. If they're constantly hitting balls up in the air and trying, and let's be honest, I think aerially they've done really well against us, Rotherham, but if they're constantly pumping balls up, and you're trying to head ball clear, the ball is constantly up in the air. Whether you try to bring it on the deck or not, it's very, very hard when the ball's set up in the air all the time. So what you're finding is quite often there's these high balls being pumped up going over Casper's head. Our defenders like Cooper will head it back, or Tanganga will head it back. Suddenly they'll head it back again, and it's all up in the air. You know, it's very difficult to get the ball. But you're right, though. It is down to the players. They should bring that ball down and try and create something. But it's just a very, very scrappy first half in particular. But you saw in the second half a few little changes. Suddenly Casper got on the ball a bit more. He probably played a little bit too deep for me. But I think he kind of had to at that point, because I think Saville came off, didn't he, as well, when he was left as the DM. And then he got on the ball a bit more. You can see what he's trying to do there. I think he did try and create some nice little through balls. Didn't quite come off. But suddenly we saw what Casper can bring to this team. But that first half, I mean, it didn't suit Casper at all. Secondly, he was a little bit out of sorts. He hadn't played for how long. He's only played like a combined, I don't know, 15 minutes in the last 5-6 games. So you're not going to expect him to kind of hit the ground running, but it took him at least 30 minutes, 40 minutes for him to kind of get into that game. You kind of see what he did in the second half. The question is, Omar, what happens tomorrow? Does Neil revert to the Saville and Mitchell combo, or does he stick with Casper and drop Saville and bring Mitchell in? What do you think he does?
I think he brings Mitchell back in personally and keeps Saville next to him. I think he's going to revert back to type a little bit there. Obviously, as you're saying, you know, Dunnell didn't really have a great first half. I've logged heads with people about this, and I've gone on Twitter about it this week as well, and put it to the chat as well. Obviously, Dunnell, what's everyone's opinions on him at the moment? Obviously, under Edwards, he was, you know, marked as the key man for us. But I'm up in the air about that one. But me personally, we'll talk about our teams probably a bit later on, but I would bring Mitchell back in as well. But I'll do some more comments just quickly, because there's loads of them coming in. Even to Connor and his little one. I love that. 4 months old and she loves the wall. Keep that going, mate.
Yeah, well done, Connor. Good night.
Evening, Jonathan. Thanks for your comment, mate. Alex S, the season we finished 8th under Harris. I think Ben Marshall signed for Norwich, killed us the season after. I make him right, because obviously Marshall came in and we went on a bit of an unbeaten run, didn't we? Carl's watching the Rotherham and Plymouth game. Yep, come on, Rotherham. 21 minutes in for an update for everyone. We're going live to New York Stadium and it's 0-0, guys. come on, Rotherham, as Daily Mill says there. I don't think we'll see Wallace on the pitch again, Chris Brown says. Yeah, obviously, Joe, Wallace got injured, didn't he? And maybe the end of his spell for Mill, he's been ruled out for the rest of the season.
Yeah, so allegedly his contract's up at the end of the season now, isn't it? And where he gets a new extension, new contract, we don't know. But I must say, very, very brave of him. I don't know how the hell the referee missed that one, but he took a massive forearm elbow in the chops, didn't he? The player went down as if like he got hurt when he didn't. So he obviously play acting. And what was interesting, Murray got up straight away. But has he got a fractured back or something, I read somewhere?
I think so, yeah. It was it was a proper coming together. I heard it was whiplash or something along those lines on the way back. But I don't know if that was just a complete rumour. But yeah, it took the wind out of him massively. And obviously, he's fractured his back as well. I mean, it's a shame, really, because he won player of the season, didn't he, 3-4 years ago? Came in under Harris initially as a centre-half. Was it Freeze transfer from Scunthorpe the year we went
That's
up?
Right, yeah.
Or the year after. And, you know, he was naturally a centre-half, played left-back, and he's had a couple of good seasons, and that whole Murray Wallace, you know, cross turn chop that he does, and does it so effectively at that point, dribbling down especially. It's a shame, really, Joe, but I think maybe it's a story of some of our players in this squad. You know, Hutchison's out of contract as well. Bradshaw, rumours have a contract extension, but I don't think anything's been publicised about that. I think they triggered a clause. Saville, Leonard, you know, maybe it is, you know, Bielkowski as well. It's the old guard kind of moving on now, and I think everyone spoke about that. But out of them lot, who would you like to keep, mate?
Well, obviously, we're going to lose a lot of loan players as well. So if you add the loan players to them, I think we discussed before, is it 10, 11 players that potentially could be out in the summer? So I think Leonard is, for me, a dead cert. I mean, you know, I hate to sort of jinx him, but he's been pretty okay. He's been pretty solid these past few games. And when he plays, there's no disguise about it. We play better with him in the side. It makes a big difference. I was in two minds about George Saville because I can see the decline in George Saville. I can see he lost his legs a little bit and it's been, shown this season in particular. You can see he's not quite the same player he was before. However, even the most sort of the biggest critic of Saba will have to admit that when he's on the pitch, it makes a difference. He definitely has a presence on the pitch. I think he lifts the players around him a little bit. I like the bite in his tackle. Even against West Brom, you know, you can see him, you know, intercepting passes, putting tackles in on Jed. Jed didn't like it a few times. And even against Rotherham as well, like he has that bit of aggression, that bit of nastiness that you need sometimes in your team. That being said, you know, can we get another year out of him at this level in the Championship? You know, I think we can. I mean, obviously, if he gets another year extension, that'd be great. But other than that, I can't see too many from the ones I've mentioned that I think deserve another extension. I mean, Hutchinson, for example, I think he's done now, isn't he? I would say.
I'd imagine he's probably a sizable earner as well, Hutch. You know, been here a few years, club captain and such as well. And, you know, it's obviously thinking of the long term now. And, you know, do you think, imagine, I don't know what he's on, but say, for example, he's on £10,000 a week, or if he's, you know, established Championship wage, so to speak, could you take a risk on someone that's on the lower ranks of the Championship, but he's 22, 23, showing promise? And you've got to kind of roll the dice in those situations. Obviously, you need to keep some of them. For me, I'd probably try and keep Saville and Leonard. They're the two I'd probably try to keep the most. Comments to everyone, obviously, you guys as well, what do you reckon? But a few comments here anyway about Harris. Obviously, we asked the question if you keep him next season. The Watch Wally says, if we don't keep Harris for next season, we will be bang in trouble without significant investment. He will at least keep it tight. That's the argument I put out as well. I've kind of viewed the analogy of everyone was so pro-Harris coming in for the short term to keep us up. Well, surely going to next season, he'd also keep us up next season if that mantra is what we're looking for. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's the bare minimum. Then he is capable of doing that. Martin Edwards says, Harris is not the long-term answer. And then Ad Robert says, can either of you defend or not Harris' decision not to bring on Leahy when we equalised or went behind against Rotherham? He scored goals in the under-21s this season. He might have made it 2-2. We'll come back to that one shortly because there was another game this week. The under-18s lost 4-3 at Leeds, but it's a good talking point there. Hello to Tony. Morning to you. I mean, I guess you're down under, I imagine. Do confirm. Harris' ploy failed miserably, according to Dave. Harris is to blame, and it backfired in the first half. The Norwood was horrendous. Got a question here. So, we've got one from Dan Wicks, a question here. How did Cooper get in team of the week? Guy's been on Joe Spies.
First of all, hello, Dan. I don't know. But which team was that in? What was that voted in?
He was in the Who Scored Team of the Week. So, you know who scored?
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Is that voted by the fan?
No, this is actually like, it's based on metrics. So they use like passes, complete years and all sorts of metrics. They have their own little... Okay. Touches to it, but Cooper was featured in the team of the game week on the Monday. There was about four or five Blackburn players in there because obviously they won quite comfortably at the Sunderland. Cooper got his admission in there. I mean, me and Ben spoke about Cooper on Wednesday, but yeah, he's lost his way a little bit, I feel like, Joe. And also with Cooper, obviously we say he kind of got left scapegoated a bit in the second half because we was more further up the pitch and he doesn't like chasing the ball backwards. That's Cooper, you know, and we know that. But he did get kind of, I think, you know, mocked a little bit at times by Tom Eaves, who's not a Championship striker, in my opinion. But he pinned Tanganga and Cooper at times and made them look really average. With Cooper, though, I said on Wednesday, I can forgive it because he's the type of defender that pops up with goals. But this season, he's not scored a single goal yet, Joe.
It's been shocking, isn't it? We all have a little punt every week on Cooper scoring 1-0 to Millwall, you know, 25-1 or whatever it might be. And these odds are getting bigger and bigger every week. I remember the days where it used to be like, you know, 2-1 on, or 3-1 in scoring. You know, it's not the case anymore. But you're right. I think he had a bit of a tough time against Rotherham, and he hasn't quite, I say he hasn't quite been performing well enough, but I think he's been better with Tanganga alongside him. I think Tanganga almost kind of compensates where Cooper lacks. So we look at, you know, Cooper's mobility, his speed. There was one incident as well where against Rotherham, the ball went down the left-hand side to Cooper's left-hand side, and he was completely out of sorts. It was Tanganga that ran across and made a really decisive tackle or block tackle there, didn't he? So I think having lost one to Tanganga, Tanganga can bail him out at times, which I'm sure gives Cooper a bit of confidence. But yeah, I don't know what's wrong with Cooper at the moment. It's got to be psychological. I mean, he loves Harris, doesn't he? I mean, he's quite open and saying his love for Harris. He's definitely playing for the man and doing what he can. But I think he's just very, very limited. Now, could that period under Edwards have really fucked his confidence that much that it's taken that a little bit away from him, that kind of belief, you know, in who he is as a player and what he's good at? Yeah, there's argument to say, should he or shouldn't he start against Huddersfield? I had a lot of people online saying bring Hutch back alongside Tanganga or move Leonard, in the middle. But I don't know. It's like about Cooper. When I see him there, I kind of I prefer him then in the team. That makes any sense, especially when we're defending. He's very good at putting, block tackles in, defending, crosses. He's good at kind of winning those headers and clearing out the danger. It's just a shame, as you say, Omar, in the attacking third, when we get into corners or set pieces, he's nowhere near effective compared to how he used to be.
Yeah, I agree. I do agree with you. It'd be interesting to see how that goes. I mean, I think there is still a player in there. Like, he's still young enough, but obviously the club backed him with a long-term contract as well. So it is a bit of a concern that long-term, where do you see it going with Cooper? I hope he doesn't fall away. I'm going to bring Dan in shortly because he's just joined in. There he is. He's put himself in. Hello, Dan. You all right?
Hello, Daniel.
One. You good? I'll just sort of reply to some of the comments. Obviously, I asked the question, who would keep out of contract players? Carl says he'd keep Brad and Sav and Lenny. I think we've got a comment from Dan here as well. He says he'd keep Sav and Leno. The rest are finished at this level. We've got a question here from... we'll come back to that question shortly, actually. Martin Edwards says we need a new captain next season. Well, we'll have to if Hutchinson is to leave. David Clark says here, Hutch out, Leonard out, Bradshaw out, Wallace out, Savile out, Bart out, goalkeeping coach out, Harris Livermore out, keep the rest.
Chuck Aldridge and Kavanagh on that list as well, mate. Kavanagh and Aldridge on that list.
Where's your poster? Where's your poster, Dan?
Next to Dan's here, everyone. I missed you, Dan, mate. How are you?
Yeah. Can we get Adam Barrett on that list as well, please? Actually, I'll add it as well.
But yeah, it's obviously a lot of, it's going to be a transitional summer, isn't it? And I think there was a comment actually I saw, which I'm going to challenge to actually. Where was it? I should have started this. John Parr, that's the worry, he says. So we obviously discussing Harris potentially staying on next season. He goes on to say, Harris replacing the players leaving. He has no pulling power. Can't see Premiership teams loaning out their players to play hoofball. So you are half right there, of course. But one thing I'd argue is the players we're talking about that are going to leave this summer, who have been here for a sustained amount of time, who have served us well and played well, they're all Neil Harris signings. So that's the argument I put to him. Obviously, there's been some clangers in along the way. Jiri Skalak, John Daly Bodvarsson, Connor Mahoney, Matt Smith somewhat.
Might have to drop off, mate. I'm getting PTSD.
Yeah. So, but, not every signing can go successfully. But what I would say is I think Harris is that one character, I'm going to use the term, he knows who a Mill player is. And I've used it. I've said it. Dan's going to... the game's gone, Dan's going to say now, and go on, Dan, retire to what I just said there, mate. Please try. I want to hear it.
I just think there is... I don't disagree in the fact that we need Millwall-like players, but the second we've asked this group of players to try and play a little bit more football, look what's happened, and the way more...
Sorry, guys, it's 1-0 Plymouth. Oh, for fuck's sake.
thanks, mate. Yeah, brilliant.
1-0 Plymouth.
Really needed that. I think the way the game's going, it's becoming harder and harder to play a style of football that we attempt to play and try and do well with it. It's just the way the modern game's going. You can see even, I think, Luton and Sheffield United, really, they're the only two teams in our league as well, to be honest. You look at it, probably you'd only say the only teams that play somewhere like us are probably Birmingham, because they've got Gary Rowett in charge, and probably Rotherham, and that's because Rotherham have an even more limited squad than us. I think we have to evolve at some point. I think it's good having the likes of players like Saville and Leonard in there, for example, as your like Millwall like players that get the club and can be a solid base, but you need more than that to build on.
Yeah, I do agree. I mean, the thing is with that, though, is I think we should embrace our Millwallness about us. I don't want to move away from that. And I've said it to, I think, to a pair of you multiple times. Like, to me, a successful Millwall team is two strikers, two wingers. It doesn't have to be 4-4-2. You can mould that in a different way, I suppose. There's other ways around that. But,
well, you're kind of limiting yourself there, mate. If you
no, but what I mean, we could have two wing backs that bomb on potentially and play 5-3-2. Do you know what I mean?
Here we go, back to five at the back. He how to throw it out. He how did Edward out for playing five at the back, and now he's saying let's go. No,
I think the one thing I say about Harris is he gets it how to get a team to succeed at the Den. The away form is questionable under Harris, and it always has been, that's for sure. But, you know, the reason why I'm confident we'll stay up is because I think we'll win at least one home game that's remaining. Well, we've got Leicester, Plymouth, Cardiff. I think we'll win one, if not two, of those games.
It will be Cardiff, because that's the one home game I can't go to out of the three that are left.
There you go.
That's
the bet then, isn't it?
Yeah, there you go. Anyone's a betting man out there.
When you look at the rebuilds, and we talk about the rebuild for the summer being huge, being massive, we know there's not going to be much money available to Harris to go and buy. I think I mentioned on our group chat earlier, I can seriously see him looking in the lower leagues and picking up another Adam Meyer type sort of player, someone who's doing it at a lower level, and then hopefully kind of bring him in, see if they can kind of bleed him into the first team. Mm-hmm. You've got the loan market, but I think what's key for Harris is to get a big, tall target man.
The way the game's going, they don't really exist as much anymore. Like,
you say that, but the way the game's going isn't Harris' philosophy, is he?
That's what I mean. So, like,
why can't we be the people that are, you know, why can't we be the ones that are being
on target man strikers?
To be traditional. Yeah. The old school.
Strikers are they're actually out there in probably the pool of players.
I tell you right now.
Actually attract. And nobody comment Kiefer Moore because it's not happening.
What I was going to say there was if we signed him that summer window, deadline day, Neil Harris maybe.
Grandma had wheels, she'd be a bike, mate.
All right, mate. But, you know, like, mate, this. I'm
Italian, mate.
No, so what's it called? I'm sure there's a scouts before. But what I'm trying to say is, like, if he had that big man, and I think it was one of the comments that actually starred a while ago, zero strikers is the big issue. Obviously, injuries to Nisbet and Bradshaw, untimely, and obviously we're not scoring our chances. Nisbet was brought in to be a goal scorer. Okay, it's not really worked out so far, but he's still got 2 more years left on his deal. It's going to be interesting to see what happens there. I suspect he'll end up back going up north to Scotland on loan to a Premier League club up there.
Just on the topic there, obviously Joe's saying that we need to sign players. There's going to be a bit of a squad overhaul and there might not be too much money available. But this is something we discussed in our group chat earlier. I'm just quite interested to see what everyone in the comments would have to say. Well, not even youngsters, but what sellable assets do we have as a football club in terms of those on the playing squad? Because a lot of our players are old. A lot of our players have proved they're not very good when they're asked to try and play a bit more football. So,
or injury prone, which I'm sure
seems to know about. So the players that we said in our group chat earlier were Kasper, Zian Fleming, Romain Essa, Idemar Maku. They were the four I put.
And Benny Mitchell. I think he's worth. I think he's still young, Benny Mitchell, isn't he?
Potentially.
Wasn't he linked to like Wolfsburg or something last summer?
He was actually, yeah.
There you go. I mean, with that though, obviously I was going to come onto this comment here, can't see the fuss about Fleming. On the back of our conversation in the group chat, who is Mill's most valuable asset, playing squad-wise? Who is the most valuable?
I'd probably say Fleming is.
The way the current market is, it could be SA though.
Don't justify yourself. Just who do you think is the most valuable asset? Come on,
I think
we'll say it in your chest.
All right, I'll say it in my chest. I think SA would probably get more money for us than Fleming.
I don't think so.
I think his bubble burst a little bit.
I'm not saying that like train's gone now, because you know, far from, he's still young enough, and I'm sure he can still impress and do well. He's got the best years ahead of him still. But if an offer came in for Zian Fleming for £8 million at the moment...
£8 million for him.
No, if we did, we could say, great.
I'll take him hostage and drive him to wherever he is.
But that could be justifiable. You can say that, you know, for us to sell him for a decent price. But if someone came in for SA, £8 million, that's way too much. I mean, we wouldn't get that in a million years.
Yeah, but potentially with SA, what could happen... Well, maybe my SA comment was a little bit exaggerated, but what could happen with SA is that we could get a good sell-on clause, potentially.
Yeah, but you talk about what's the highest valuable player at the moment in our club to sell on now, I will still say it's Fleming.
Okay, anyone who's played Football Manager recently will probably say it's SA.
I'm surprised you didn't go Casper the Nordjot.
Well, I would have picked out.
I don't think he's allowed to after I violated him in our group chat the other day.
But this,
I'm allowed to say a good word about Casper ever again.
But this season hasn't been well. The start weren't too bad, but obviously the last sort of Harry games on the Harris, he hasn't had an opportunity to shine, is he? So I'm sure his valuation will go down a little bit. But he's on a long contract with us anyway, so I can't see him going anywhere if he does go.
Casper or Fleming?
Yeah, Casper. I'm sure we'll get what we paid for him, which I think was it like 2.7 or 2.8 million, I think, from memory. So it's a decent amount of life.
I never saw concrete transfer fee come out, so this might be a That Mill podcast exclusive.
I think that's the highest fee we pay for a player, but it's gone under the radar a little bit. No one really talks about it, but they've paid big money for him, haven't they?
On the subject of going under the radar, we have spent a lot of money this season.
Oh yeah. And season before as well.
I think this season in particular, Nisbet, obviously Tarkic.
I think our next spend in the summer was about five and a half million.
I reckon more, to be honest. It wouldn't surprise
me. When you've been supporting Manuel as long as I have, from like the 80s, yeah? And you've been holding this same trivial question, who's Mill's highest fee you paid to? And it was Paul Goddard for fucking 20 years or not more.
Until Bradshaw came along and then two days later with Leonard.
Yeah, that's it, exactly. That's when it will happen. It will happen very, very quickly, but... For years, I kept saying everybody like about Millwall, where we sit in the current climate, and 800,000 is what we paid for Goddard back in fucking like the late 80s, 88, 89, it might have been, 1990. So, 89, so it shows you how much we've evolved as a club, and we are spending a lot of money, probably not as much compared to other teams in this league, but when you've been supporting Mill as long as I have, and you see the money we've spent in the last few seasons, you've got to say, you know what, fair play.
Mm.
We are trying, we are putting our hands in our pockets a little bit, but it's still not quite enough, is it?
It really is. As well, the investments, it feels like. I mean, there was a mantra. It felt like similar age profiles and stuff, but not worked out so far. But there's still a couple that might come good. I mean, Martin's replied and John's replied, old style Millwall was gone. The game's moved on.
I think there's a little bit aspect of that, but I think if you look, there is still a market for some kind of players like that because, I mean, I think Chelsea is like a pretty poor example of this to pick, for example. But if you look at their squad, they've still got like Thiago Silva in the squad, like quite an experienced head and stuff like that. They've still got someone like Conor Gallagher who's came through the academy and players like that who are still in the club and still in the first team. So I think there's still a little bit of room for them, but the way the game's moving, they're players that are probably going to make up, what, a fifth of your squad, maybe 20%, maybe a little bit less than that.
Who are the Mill-type players in our squad at the moment? Because I'd argue there's about two, three.
Who would you say the Mill-type players are?
Danny Mack, Billy Mack, maybe Hutchinson.
Cooper?
Cooper's questionable.
Leonard, Ryan Leonard, Savile.
So maybe
Bradshaw. No, Honeyman.
Okay, Honeyman is actually a Mill-type player.
Bradshaw as well.
Scrap that point. Should
we carry on? Should we just start there over?
We could probably get a proper wall start in 11 here, couldn't we?
Back to the assets about who's worth most favourite asset. Bailey says Fleming. The question's been asked, obviously, what would you get for Fleming? The watch one, he says 8 million. Lol, back to you, John. Obviously, 8 million.
I think, does he have 1 year left on his contracts? If he does, then that could obviously put us in.
I reckon there'd be some sort of clause in there, surely. I reckon it must have an optional year that the club can trigger.
I mean, I would possibly say if he has more than 1 year left, probably 5 to 6 million, I think we could probably get for him.
Again, I don't know how true this is. I heard through someone allegedly that we've got an option of another year.
So
whether it's true or not, I don't know.
They won't wait until next year. If they've got any sense, what they would probably do to try and raise some money is they'd probably trigger it and then try and sell him this summer.
Yeah.
And I think there will be... I know he hasn't been as good as he has been this season, but I do think there will be teams that are still going to be interested. Maybe not the Premier League teams, but I think if you look at the teams that are likely to come down, I could possibly see someone like a Sheffield United being interested in him, for example. I think the teams that... I think someone like a West Brom, I think if a West Brom get promoted...
Burnley again, perhaps?
Burnley did sign a lot of players. I think Burnley won't really be adding too many players. I think they'll be trying to chop players because they have a really big squad and they're going to obviously be I mean, they'll get the parachute payments, which is obviously just a bit of a joke in itself, but they're still going to have a squad that's too good. But I think someone like a West Brom or a Sheffield United, a team like that, who are towards the top end of this division and have the funds to go out and buy a player for 5 or 6 million that can make the difference, I think that's probably going to be where Fleming's going to be in the kind of market.
I think just on this, obviously, Bailey says 22 goals in two games, in two seasons playing that, let's not be ridiculous. That's anything that doesn't create much at all. One line data shows he is near top of the championship. I stuck with seeing Fleming through thick and thin, by the way. I'm going to get that one in.
Everyone talks about, you know, him and how he's played and his appetite for playing for Millwall. Of course, the first season, he's doing really well, scoring lots of goals. When he didn't get the move to Burnley, lots of people saw the way he was, his demeanour. You know, he kind of, not sulked, but you could see he wasn't quite the same player anymore. Let's be honest, I think if you had the opportunity to play in the Premier League and that bubble's been burst, I think that, yeah, anyone in that situation is going
to... Unless you have a strong affiliation to the club, like if you're, say as if it was like a Billy Mitchell or a Danny McNamara, yeah, potentially.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But then what...
What's dinner, by the way? What was dinner?
A chicken wrap from McDonald's, mate. I've got two of them. I've got three cronies.
Cheers, so everyone. I'll carry on.
Health is wealth, everyone. Health is wealth. I'm just taking over as the pod starts.
How many beers you've had tonight? I'm halfway through a conversation. You sure?
Yeah, zero.
Let me finish what I was saying before you fucking talk about what he's had for dinner.
Here we go.
I lost my train of thought there. What was I saying? Right, oh yeah, Zien. So, of course, he was sulking a little bit. You can see at the start of the season, he was struggling. He weren't quite the same player. One thing I give him credit to is since Harris has come in, I don't know whether he's had a one-to-one with him or chat to him, but you see a different type of Zian. Like, Harris has got this extra bit of aggression out of him. People talk about, oh, he's not really scoring many goals or doing much. Remember, what you are seeing from me at the moment is effort. And that's something that was probably lacking at the start of the season under Joe Edwards. And you see that desire, that willingness. And I think, you know, I can see Zian is very, very happy at the club at the moment. You know, despite there'll be rumours come the summer, I'm sure, about him wanting to leave and everything else. He is happy. And again, you know, you can see that in his effort and the way he's playing at the moment. I just feel that sometimes, you know, fans get on players' backs and they think that they've, you know, if you cut them in half, they bleed blue and they're Millwall, but they're not. They're just people like us. We go to work, we earn an income. If we had an opportunity to go for a job with a competitor and earn double your money, and then somebody says you can't do it, of course you're going to be a bit upset, you know?
He didn't want to go to Burnley anyway, Joe. Who wants to go to Burnley? Come on.
No, of course not. But that's slightly...
Ben Green would move up there.
But he's ambitious, isn't he? He's an ambitious guy.
Ben or Zian?
Both. but that's where Zian wants to be. He wants to play in the Premier League. I think, you know, if he had his wish, he'll be with Millwall. Of course it will. But I think he will want to play there eventually one day. So, to your point, I agree. It might come up in the next year or so. We could extend that contract another year and then sell him on, as Dad said, for a nice little profit. Then maybe that's where the money's going to come from.
Comments on here, obviously, Goddard, 800,000 was one goal from Ad Roberts. Alexander, our record signings were Paul Goddard and Uwe Fuchs. We don't spend money well. Ian's a big E, mate. I'll see you up there tomorrow. And if anyone's going there tomorrow, yep, I'll see you up there. What's up, Big E? Goddard got two goals, apparently, because Mill Holdings. So a comment here from Dave Clark, under-18s are valuable assets. So on the back of that, obviously yesterday, the under-18s lost 4-3 in the FA Youth Cup semi-final to Leeds. On the back of that, obviously we spoke about it a little bit earlier, Joe. Pardon me. But on that, obviously there's a comment earlier from Andrew saying Harris has to start some of the under-21s, first game of next season, bed them in early. If we lose or if we draw or lose a few, we'll still have time to improve. Otherwise, how will we progress next season? So long term, I tweeted about it a bit earlier and spoke about it in the chat. We've got to find a way to get all these youngsters in, haven't we? Because, okay, you can't give them a chance for the sake of it. But the facts are, last season, we was the best in our regional and the country outside the Premier League in our 23s. This season, we're one of the top four because everyone looks to the FA Youth Cup in the under-18 level. The facts are there. We've got the talent coming through. South London is the hotbed of youth products, as we've seen amongst the Premier League clubs out there nowadays. We've got to try and get that pathway. And for me, it's to have that edge. And, you know, because we're not going to compete financially and spend 10, 15 million pounds and, you know, on one single player. But if we can bring players in to generate revenue ourselves, it's got to be an avenue the club are looking at surely in the long term, mate.
I agree totally. And I think under Joe Edwards, you could argue that not many of these youngsters, especially like defensive players, will probably get into the side because when you're playing expansive football, you've got to be technically, you've got to be right up there. You've got to have the experience. It's very hard for youngsters to come in. I just think under Harris, where he plays direct football, and I'm sure you'll probably still carry that system on next season, you're a little bit limited as to what you need to do as a footballer. Yeah, he'll give away possession most games. So therefore, the likes of Okoli at the back, Alex Mitchell, yeah, these defenders, I think there's a home for them next season at Millwall. I can see them being bedded in and doing quite well. You look at the players like Malachi. You know, okay, I know he's only at Sutton at the moment, but he's doing quite well. He scored a worldie of a goal the other week for them, and all the fans are singing about how great he is, you know. So there's lots of young players coming through the system that I think will play or can play a part next season. So, yeah, I'm not saying that this is what's going to happen, but my gut feel is that we're going to be very limited what we could spend next season. It's about getting rid of, yeah, some players, save some money on transfer fees and use that for wages instead, and start bringing some lower league players and bring some youth players in. But out of curiosity, which players do you feel are good enough in our youth system to get into the starting team for next season?
The problem is I've seen a few of them play, but I couldn't give you... I mean, you're right to mention, obviously, a name drop, but I think one of the comments in here actually, is it true we have an option back to buy Lafay? Obviously, he's doing well at League Two, isn't he? And I think it is documented that we have a buyback clause on him. I don't know if it's to match the highest bidder or if there's a set fee involved, but I have seen it reported.
That's
refusal.
So when a fee is matched, then it'll be offered to us to try and match it, basically. So
I think from what you boys are saying, I think what we have to do is if we're... Pre-season is the perfect time to look at some of these young players, and we did it a little bit of route, particularly in the Gillingham game. We played two teams for 45 minutes, and I think it was quite clear to see him the 45 minutes that Okoli played at centre-half. Mm. He looked very uncomfortable and was getting exposed a little bit. So I think they, you know, when we saw him in the Youth Cup final, I think he looked a really, really good player, but they obviously looked at him and thought, you know what, he's probably not ready yet. Let's get him out. Let's get him some men's football a bit lower down the divisions where he's going to be comfortable, can compete, build his confidence. And they found him a good loan in Bromley, being with Milton.
Sorry to interrupt you, Dan, but before I forget, just on that point, I think when he, in that Youth Cup final, he was a man.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport, powered by fans.